Alrighty, here we go.
The host has the recording feature on.
Hi everyone, it's Tuesday, 12 noon Eastern, and the matchmaker is in. I'm Karen Webster. Today I'm joined by Payoneer CEO Scott Gallett. Hey Scott, thanks for joining me today.
For having me.
So let's a little context before we dive into all the matchmaker stuff that we love to explore on these shows. Payoneer is a pioneer, I couldn't resist that little play on words, in the field of mass payments for marketplaces, marketplaces that span a variety of industry sectors, from freelancers to e-commerce marketplaces to content creators, like marketplaces that host stock photography, for example. And the friction that Payoneer solves for is allowing those marketplaces to pay those providers of services and sellers of goods any way they wish to be paid and anywhere they happen to be in the world. So Scott, let's start with perhaps a rather basic question. How did these marketplaces do that before you came along and before the opportunity to think about digital payments was a reality for them?
Painfully. for most of them, it really was quite a challenge for them, and typically quite a challenge for the suppliers or the payees that they needed to pay. And so why don't we look at Getty Images as an example that we can use to illustrate this. You know, Getty Images, well known as one of the largest stock photography clearinghouses in the world. And so not surprisingly, they have photographers that own rights to images that come from more than 100 countries around the world. And those photographers range in size from sole proprietors who might get paid a couple hundred bucks a few times a year, all the way up through very, very large organizations and agencies that might get paid $100,000 or more, obviously on a very regular and consistent basis. And so they have a company like Getty Images before having a wide range of payments they needed to make across a wide range of sizes, across a wide range of geographies, across different types of recipients. They really relied on the kind of traditional means of transferring value, and so they used checks, which they used in a couple of different geographies. So they would have a provider for U.S. checks that they worked with, and then have a provider for checks in the U.K. that they worked with, and international wires, and then ACH for payments in the U.S. So, you know, as a U.S.-based company and a U.S.-based platform, they worked with different providers, each of which they had to integrate with or manage individually, each of which had its own funds flow and reconciliation process that they needed to orchestrate and manage, each of which would have their own error handling processes that they and their team would have to deal with and address. Combined with all of the suppliers all over the world, that they would have to actually figure out how to collect the supplier details, how to collect and verify and manage the payment requirements, and then obviously deal with those suppliers for any delays or other issues that get experienced, which, as we all know, with international payments is an unfortunate and regular part of the experience. So, what we offer to a company like Getty Images is the ability to connect to us via API, consolidate everything into a single, essentially free fund flow. I didn't even mention the cost, by the way, that they had to bear the cost of all of that. So we enable Getty Images to integrate with us, use a single API, a single fund flow, integrated into their Oracle ERP system. We actually manage the collection and verification of all the supplier details. We manage the collection and verification of the banking and payment details. We offer the suppliers a wide range of choices. So a sole proprietor in one country might choose a local transfer through the local clearing system, which we offer in about 130 countries. A larger company in a more developed market might just want a wire to come in, which we offer in over 200 countries, in over 150 currencies. Someone else, sole proprietor in Eastern Europe, might actually want a prepaid MasterCard to get their funds loaded electronically so they could access that even on a weekend. We actually offer paper checks. So anybody that wanted to retain the checks that they had been paid with before could do that. All offered through a single connection where we take all of the costs, all the complexity, all the administration, all the error handling, all the customer care off of the shoulders of a company like Getty and do it in with kind of a single technical integration and a complete service model.
Wow. I was going to say a lot of friction, Scott. That was like so much friction that you've been able to remove. It's a wonder that, it must have made it very hard to do business and have a satisfied, producer or member of the marketplace, because it probably took a long time to get paid.
Absolutely. And so it was painful on both sides because the suppliers didn't have a lot of options. The options they had either took a long time or were extremely expensive, especially for smaller suppliers,
right,
where the cost of a landing fee on a wire might take 5 to 10% of the income right there. And for Getty, it was incredibly time consuming and incredibly expensive for them as well. And so that really becomes a constraint to their ability to grow and handle a big base of suppliers. And so we've seen that over and over and over again, that really on both sides, on the marketplace side and on the supplier side, we actually help by reducing friction, we accelerate velocity and make it easier for both sides to grow. And that's really how we position everything to the clients that we serve and the payees on the other side, is we're really here to be your partners in growth. We're here to enable you to focus on the things that you're trying to accomplish as opposed to the things that you need to deal with in order to obviously fulfill your promises. And so we try to take all of that, and obviously over the last 12 years we've built good relationships and a lot of trust. And so we've been able to build a strong base of clients that we work with.
So take us back to the beginning and how this all started. You've been doing this for, more than a decade. And people tend to focus on, the raging success of a business, after the hard work of getting it started and pivoting and igniting has happened. And we'll talk about all of those things as part of this conversation. But take us back to the beginning. I know you weren't there at the very beginning, but how did it get started? What was the seed of the idea?
Yeah, it really was a combination of some smart ideas and a fair amount of good luck. and so, the company early on recognized how the world was changing and saw kind of two sides of e-commerce. One side was kind of, and we hear all this talk about cross-border e-commerce, which is usually people talking about consumers buying from stores across borders. But the folks that started Payoneer very much also saw that there was another side to cross-border e-commerce, which was that there were going to be new earning opportunities for folks all over the world. And there was going to be payment friction that was going to actually need to be overcome. And so they started by offering a prepaid card product, which was really meant to enable kind of a marketplace to cover kind of anybody anywhere in the world, to make payments quickly, to get out of some of the high fixed costs of international wires and make it kind of lower cost. And when I said luck, you know, so there were a couple of things that came along with that. So kind of starting with a company like Odesk, mm-hmm. you know, think of it kind of like an eBay for service providers. They had a lot of payments they need to make to a lot of suppliers in a lot of places. And so a couple of things happened. One was that the card actually started to take off. You know, so we kind of had ignition. And we had it because there was already a platform and people wanted to work on that platform and they didn't have a great way to get paid. So compared to the alternatives, it was a better alternative. So Ignition, you know, started that way. And then the other thing that became really important is the Payoneer brand was on that card. And so those same freelancers that were selling on Odesk were also selling on other platforms, whether it was guru.com or freelancer.com or Elance or others. And so they started to get in touch with those other marketplaces. And that was really the first time we saw the beginnings of a network effect. And so really, as a result, we kind of lucked our way into having suppliers from 200 countries around the world that knew who we were because we worked with these marketplaces. And we had those suppliers telling other marketplaces to come work with us. And then since then, it's been a long journey of really trying to, you know, not outsmart the market, kind of put one foot in front of the other, see where, you know, suppliers on one side and marketplaces on the other are focusing and see how we can reduce friction and address their needs.
I want to go back to something you said, which I think is fascinating. So, you know, there's always the chicken and egg of these matchmaking platforms, and it sounds like there's a big assist given to the supplier that worked across platforms that saw the easy way of being paid via Payoneer with a particular platform that they were part of, wanting to have the same experience other places. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and I think it makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I have a couple of different bank accounts, but I really, on a day-to-day basis, I use one. You know, I don't really want to have to go multiple places to see what's happening with my money and whatever. You know, the money that I use day-to-day, I really use one thing because it makes my life much easier to be able to just deal with one account provider, one place to look, one thing to keep track of, and be able to just have kind of a mental picture of everything that's going on. And so, again, if you think about it from a business perspective, it's the same thing. It's much easier to reconcile when you're kind of consolidated in one place than if you're working across several. And so if you're a business owner, whether you're a sole proprietor or a bit bigger than that, there is a lot of value to being able to have all of your needs met by one partner. Mm-hmm. The hard part of being the partner is to get in the door in the first place, for one, mm-hmm. and then the second is to provide a broad enough range of capabilities to actually meet their needs that they would like to have solved. Mm-hmm. But we were, again, lucky enough to kind of get that foot in the door and kind of have our wedge, and then that's part of what we really tried to do is to kind of follow their needs the rest of the way and try to connect every place that they were trying to connect and support every need that they expressed that they had.
Scott, how much did the evolution of the marketplace have to do with your ability to scale and ignite? I mean, clearly marketplaces are the thing and they do make it easier for suppliers to kind of find places and gigs in a variety of different places. Is there a correlation that you guys have drawn to the success of those businesses and the success of yours?
I mean, there's no question, but I would start with the power of, you know, the internet first as a, you know, a transformational force, and marketplaces really as one of the best embodiments of the power of the internet to transform buying and selling and the ability to make matches, you know, matchmaking. Mm-hmm. And so for us, you know, we look and we think, you know, the world is changing. There's some very powerful forces at work that are much, much bigger than we are and much more secular is sustainable and scalable than anything related to us. And so that's really the powerful transformation. We've positioned ourselves in a way where we maybe make it a bit better. We reduce some of the friction. We try to make it easier for everybody. We try to bring trust, stability, scalability to it, and simplicity to it. And there's no question that we've benefited significantly from plugging into it. And I think we've benefited the overall ecosystem. Another thing that's really changed a lot, which again, we benefited from and marketplaces benefited from, but really had nothing to do with us. You know, I'd say for the first several years of the evolution of our business, we mostly were involved with services and digital goods. But the entire global infrastructure around moving goods, physical goods around the world from one country into any other country has been also really transformed over the last decade. There have been billions of dollars invested, and that's really made possible for merchants and manufacturers all over the world to actually deliver goods. And so that created kind of another leg of growth for marketplaces. Now goods-based marketplaces. And so that's really been another kind of sea change in the way the world works that we've both facilitated to some extent but benefited from as well.
So think about the five or six years that you've been at the helm, and think a little bit about the changes in the business since then. Obviously you've achieved a different level of scale and a different sort of turbocharged ignition as a result. How did you know? Was there a point in time over that six-year period that you said, aha, I think this is now something where the flywheel is clearly engaged and at this point it's all about scale?
Actually, you know, for me it was really even before I joined. You know, and I give really all the credit to the team that was here. I just don't think they hadn't quite understood what they had built. And so, you know, when I joined, the company was still really focused on delivering prepaid cards as the primary way that they supported the market. But what excited me was the marketplaces, the globalization of commerce, the growing opportunity and power of the small business who is perpetually underserved, the electronification of corporate payments. You know, so there were all these broad trends and themes, including also emerging markets and really the power of what was developing there. There were all these trends and themes that I thought were compelling, and so I was pretty much done with prepaid cards as the focus of what I wanted to deal with before I joined Payoneer. So I joined in spite of prepaid cards, not because of it. Nothing against prepaid cards. It's still an important part of what we do, but it's a piece of a much bigger puzzle. And for us, you know, it was very much about, okay, let's recognize what we're doing. Let's recognize the way we're creating connections, how we're facilitating commerce to happen, and how we can actually kind of follow those paths to actually do more. And the company already had languages, was already doing social marketing, already had suppliers from over 200 countries, was already kind of deeply engaged in the marketplace economy. And so all these pieces and parts were there. And so it was really just kind of helping them round out the vision of what they actually had the potential to become. And since then, it's really just been, again, kind of putting one foot in front of the other down that path.
These businesses, the great irony of these businesses is that they only look easy once they're doing their thing. The flywheel is turning and ignition has happened. But it's very, very hard to get there. When you came into the business, you came from payments, so you knew payments, so you knew all the good, the bad, and the ugly of it. But were there things that surprised you as you thought about taking it to the next level that you hadn't necessarily considered in getting the business to the next level that you can think of and would like to share?
Sure. I mean, if we have another hour, I can keep going. No, but it's a super complicated, kind of intellectually stimulating and extremely challenging business. And there are just layers upon layers of complexity to it. And so, you know, once you start to get your head around kind of the AML puzzle of, you know, okay, wait a minute, we got to figure out how to do diligence on suppliers in 200 countries and territories, and kind of you figure that out, and then you see, wait a minute, you know, it the regulatory environment, you know, now we have to figure out how do we deal with the regulatory environment, not just all over the world, but actually it's evolving in many of those places as we're building the business. And so you have, you know, regulatory uncertainty, then you have the evolution of the banking system, and where, you know, banks are kind of alternately excited to partner with fintech companies or looking to stop working with fintech companies, and kind of figuring out, okay, you know, how do we make sure that our promise to our customers is that we're always going to be on, we're always going to be able to do what they need us to do, and how do we make that happen? And that means redundancy and investing multiple times to make sure that we have, you know, infrastructure that will never get turned off. And so I can keep going. I mean, languages, and as we put people on the ground and markets around the world, and, you know, learning local customs in more places. I mean, there are so many layers of challenges, which is the fun.
Yep.
Not to mention trying to keep a strong culture in a fast-growing global company where you're hiring tons of people from different cultures and different backgrounds in different places around the world all the time.
How many people are part of Payoneer at this point?
We're now around 800 people.
Wow.
Spanning from Silicon Valley to Tokyo, and with a lot more places in between now than we had even a year ago. So that's been one of the key trends and kind of evolution for our business, has been to get closer to the markets and engage more closely with the suppliers and the marketplaces around the world. And so that's been a whole nother driver of investment and growth for us. It's been, again, really interesting. Go ahead.
How do you decide what verticals to attack next? I mean, there are a variety of marketplace types that you serve. Is there a particular vetting factor or filter that you use before you venture into a new part of the marketplace arena, which is pretty vast these days?
Yeah, no, definitely. Although I'd say part of what's fun and also challenging about our business is that we have kind of a push side, and there's also a pull side, which has really also served us well. Because I'd say one of the things we're very good at is listening and then following or pulling threads. So we probably approach new markets like almost everybody else does, you know, thinking about, you know, where are their needs and challenges and friction, how big are those needs, how large is the addressable market? How sustainable are the value that we can bring, and how sustainably differentiated is that? And so, you know, kind of all of those things on one side. But on the other side, over half of the new clients that we sign up come to us.
Interesting.
And I'd say we have consistently been pulled into new markets. And so, you know, we didn't start off working with Airbnb from the beginning. There were suppliers that started to work with us that asked us essentially to help them work with Airbnb. And so we then had teams that tried to figure out why, what was going on. We kind of pulled the thread a bit. And then our sales team went into Airbnb and we said, we think you have a payment problem. They said, you're right. And we started to explore ways that we could actually help reduce some of the friction, the challenges that they and their hosts were experiencing. And so, again, that's been, I'd say, more often than not, that's actually been how we have found our way into new markets, has been by being pulled in by somebody.
It's a pretty high-class problem to have, Scott.
They are, no question. And that's why I said we've been lucky more than good across our history, and fortunately we've had some folks that have been good enough at paying attention and listening and pulling those threads when we've found the threads of opportunity.
I think you're being humble. I think it's lucky and good. So I can say that based on what I know and what I've heard. Final question. What matchmaker out there do you admire and take inspiration from? There are lots of them. Everyone says Uber. Given the frictionless of the friction free experience that they've created, and frankly how they've leveraged their platform. But are there matchmakers that you really think have nailed a particular aspect of being a matchmaker that you like to talk about?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's almost kind of silly to say it, and we have so much respect for Uber and for Airbnb and others, but I have to say, watching Amazon at work, it is really something to behold. And what I admire about them is not just the way they have, I mean, they really have transformed retail in so many significant ways. The marketplace is such a key part of that. But to me, it's their relentless pursuit of the more and the better with a long-term view of how they're actually going to be able to transform the experience for both the consumer and the merchants and manufacturers. And even in the face of Wall Street questions about profitability and things like that, they have just been steadfast in their long-term view and their relentless pursuit of doing more and kind of maintaining and achieving their vision. And so I see companies like Airbnb and Uber kind of following in a path like that. But Amazon's been doing it longer at greater scale and with just such a significant impact. So again, kind of almost silly to say, but really admire what they've accomplished.
No question. I think the Amazon Go grocery concept that they announced yesterday is fascinating, and I think reflects both a shift in the market, but a shift that they've driven. It's not only the experience inside the market, but it's how people are using physical markets these days. Why go to the store to buy paper towels and laundry detergent when you can have it delivered? Go and buy the things that you need that are fresh and need to be consumed in the next couple of days or hours. It's a fascinating shift to watch. I agree. They're really something. Well, Scott, we're at the end of our time. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Before we sign off, advice to matchmakers in waiting, all of those innovators that are looking at you and looking at the opportunity to serve matchmakers or to actually become one. Thoughts that you'd like to leave them with?
Don't outsmart the market. Listen to what people are doing, listen to what their needs are, and solve a real problem. And if you do that, and if you're either lucky enough or smart enough to position yourself in a large enough market space, you'll have a starting point to build to something successful.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Solve a problem. There's such a simple statement, but such a very, very powerful concept. You have to solve a problem, remove a friction, and then the rest, with a lot of hard work, can often take care of itself.
I totally agree.
Scott, thanks very much for joining me today. It was a pleasure to have you, and thanks everyone for listening in. Appreciate your time and your time as well, Scott. I hope everyone has a great rest of the day, and until next time, thanks so much. Bye-bye now.
Happy holidays.